my conference this morning deals with not one but two things. On the one hand, organ transplants and the much argued question of criteria of death. And on the other, this relation of this particular question, its ethical implications, to what is the very center of Christian spirituality, charity. All the great fathers of the church, all the great doctors of the scholastic period, those who are doctors of the church in the narrow sense of the term, such as St. Bonaventure and St. Thomas, and we hope very soon, Blessed John Duns Scotus, as soon as we can get him canonized. And there are many others as well, all insist that without charity, there is no spirituality, or there is a spirituality, but it's not very holy. We often forget when we throw around the word spiritual, that if it's spiritual, it must be good. And the devil's very spiritual, but I don't think he is very good by any ordinary definition of what is meant by goodness, precisely because he is so contrary to God. God is holy by nature. We are holy. We are truly spiritual in the sense that God is spiritual to the degree that we share and practice that charity. Now, what is interesting in this question, that you might think is only a medical question, or at best only an ethical question in the sense of Aristotle or one of the ancients, particularly in this particular, which you'll see is very close to a stoical mentality. What is the justification for modifying the traditional rules, language of the great textbooks and casebooks of moral theology as charity? Why wouldn't you, as it were, and which you'll see in a moment, but why wouldn't you agree to assisted suicide if you could help your neighbor? On the further point, didn't Christ commit suicide on the cross for our sake? And St. Maximilian Kolbe, that was one of the arguments of the Advocatus Diaboli, the devil's advocate, in the process of beatification and canonization of St. Maximilian. Here he offered his arm for the fellow there in the concentration camp who injected the poison. Why he had despaired like all the rest in the play, we can understand that. We don't blame him for that. And so he decided, as it were to end it all. It was not a heroic act of martyrdom. It was simply suicide. There, of course, suicide was considered traditionally as a serious sin, a lack of courage, an escape from suffering. And so we can see there is something very much to meditate on. If we don't see clearly immediately the answer to those who say, okay, it's quite all right to, as long as you think the person is probably dead, that's enough, start cutting him up. But there have been people who have thought to be probably dead who have all of a sudden, as it were, just before the cutting started, there's a recent case within the last year, I think, in Texas, where the fellow came to at a certain point just before the knife went in, and it wasn't a resurrection. It was simply, as it were, nature taking its course. The fellow wasn't dead in the first place. In these cases, the traditional teaching of the church is probability, no matter how good, no matter what the science, is not enough. Where there are questions of justice and eternal salvation, either you're absolutely certain that the fellow is stone cold and only a resurrection would bring him back to life, or you can't, as it were, begin to treat him as though he were a corpse. So anyway, let us see what is the dilemma at the present time. And there are several dilemmas, as you will see, but I just want to sketch the problem and then, as it were, review a recent statement of Pope Benedict XVI to a congress of theologians, medical people meeting in Rome to discuss the whole question of brain death and the criteria that are to be used before, as it were, you can begin to take organs from the body. It's a very fine statement. And he has reiterates the tradition. He puts it in modern terminology, but he hasn't changed the meaning one iota. That is very important because we see precisely at the point where science, The natural order is sometimes what is referred to as the natural law, which governs that order insofar as it is personal. It was the ratio ordinis of the ancients, the very essence of order. Without order, there is chaos. Without order, there is the arbitrary. Without order, there is tyranny, slavery. Tyranny on the part of the one who determines, slavery on the one on the part who has to submit to laws which are not really laws, but an abuse of power. And here we must recognize there is a fundamental problem also here, further. Really, even if we're not PhDs, even if we're not professional scientists, even if we do not have the training to actually care for those who are sick, if we're not advocating that someone who simply has a good knowledge of theology go into the surgery and begin, as it were, operating. I don't think I would like that myself. I don't want a PhD or an STD to be there. I want somebody who knows what he has the art of surgery. That's another matter entirely. But we see here where two things come together. Science, and particularly the ultimate purpose of all empirical science, medicine. Caring for the human body, which is not simply another body, which is unique. It is an essential part of the human person. There is no human person, according to the ancient theologians, unless body and soul are united. Yes, the soul is personal. But the person is such that she has for a moment ceased to exist in the metaphysical sense of the term. When soul separates from body. Without this concept, we do not understand what the old moralists meant by integrity of the body. Normally speaking, life cannot be maintained without integrity. Whenever integrity, when you begin, well, I guess I've got two eyes, so I'll take out one and give it to you. Yeah, you who are failing in eyesight, or share your ear. We cannot simply say because there is our double organs that the two organs don't pertain to integrity. From this derives the old term mutilation, which doesn't mean cutting your finger, which heals. That's not a mutilation in a moral sense. It means taking off an organ. It means suppressing a vital function. Pope John Paul II pointed that out. If we don't, as it were, understand what these terms mean, we cannot see clearly what are the problems. And then when we come to the dilemma, Grandpa is said to be dying. Shall we pull the plugs, take the tubes out, let him starve as quickly as possible. That leads to a question. How sacrosanct is life? And who has the right to determine these things? We shall see that the teaching of Christ, as before him, in his first presentation of Moses, only God can make the rules concerning how human life is given. The difference between breeding of animals and procreation of persons, and how death, which in the first instance is a natural thing, there's no particular obligation of God to give us the gift of immortality in the flesh. Death is also a punishment after the fall of our first parents. But death in itself is not something essentially wicked. We don't like it, but it's not a sin to die. Put it that way. A sin is far, far worse. But who, as it were, knows how to make death humane? Only the Lord. And any attempt to tinker with it, and this is one of the principles I want to stress, and it's one of the things that must be fundamental to any genuine spirituality, the willingness to be humble, to accept not the authority of a creature. That's exactly what the serpent was suggesting, and very seductively. How many people today refuse to obey Christ? But they run, as it were, to the first dictator that comes down the pike as the Savior. And we have, I have relatives in Germany who told me a few things about what happened when Hitler was allowed to take power. Talk to some Russians who are good Christians about what happened for 75 years under that diabolical regime known as communism. Of course, there is an attractive point, common life. But common life without the supernatural virtue of charity is not possible in this life perfectly. Especially after the fall, property is necessary, not to make money, but to protect the integrity of the family and especially the responsibilities and duties of the father. And the modern economics doesn't take that into consideration. That's where the problem is. So all these things are things we need to reflect and to understand clearly the principles, because they do pertain to a genuine cultivation of spirituality, not sentimentality, not sensational experiences that make me feel great. Boy, I'm the holy one now. No, very often we know in the spiritual life, yes, there are enthusiasms at the beginning. Yes, there's an enthusiasm at the beginning of marriage, but marriage is also a supernatural vocation. It's a holy thing. It's not a contract. So you go out as it were, I give you so much and you give me so much, and we'll go on as it were making do with all of our faults, and maybe breaking up when we decide that's the time to break up. And all these things we seek, as it were, to grow in holiness, but humbly. So here first, I get on with my point and get up to the heart of this talk, which is that recent statement where the Pope brings two things together. Yeah, the rules, traditional rules for organ transplants, govern mutilations, etc., their abuse, their rejection, and charity. Remember his first encyclical, Deus Caritas Est, God is love, and who abides in love. But what is true love? He's insisting here on an objective norm, because when there is no objective norm, when we say love is agape, there's no object at all, it's just that sense that you're generous, even to the point of committing suicide to be generous to somebody else. Is that love? No. Precisely because it is not love of God for his own sake above all, and therefore I accept it. We shall see, secondly, that where we do not understand charity in that sense, as we no longer are practicing person, and you continue to live, even though as were I. And thirdly, because between the two, there's a great mystery, that of redemptive suffering. A person who can only suffer is doing more, if he unites himself with that, is doing more for his neighbor than those who are making $1 million a year and perhaps putting it in a foundation. There is an enormous difference between philanthropy, as it is normally practiced at the present time, often for getting out of paying taxes, contributing in a more sacrificial way to the common good, even if it's the common good in the temple. And criteria of death considered abstract. Brain death or cardiac arrest as a criteria or could not be carried out without taking the life of things such as, okay, everybody hear me all right now? Fading. Although organ transplants and criteria of death considered abstract are two different things, and they might be studied quite independently of one another, in fact, without something like brain death or cardiac arrest or other such things, which in the past were called clinical death. They were signs, as it were, indications that told the physician attending that there doesn't seem to be any life here. Seen. As far as he can tell. But whether that corresponds to the moment in which the soul and the body separate, the soul and the body is a true cadaver, corpse, incapable of being resuscitated in any way, except as were in the sense that the devils sometimes have been said to make dead corpses dance, as in the famous case in Paris around the beginning of the 18th century. Whether that is simply a dead body being manipulated as though it were, you might manipulate any other thing. They come together. Why the interest in brain death as a substitute for the ordinary criteria? Because it's easier to come to, but this person is probably dead, we can cut him up. Why not wait? Because if you wait too long, even a couple of seconds after the real death, the organs are useless. For the most part. Now, we are not talking about extracting skin or blood. That's not what is meant here. Blood replaces itself. The skin will easily replace itself in ordinary. That was never been any particular problem. The problem arises when, in order to get a vital organ, vital organ is perhaps the modern term that describes what was being discussed under other terms in the old moral theology books, you have to, as we're practically speaking, extract the organ before the person is dead. Now, all of this runs into conflict with the traditional teaching on what is called, quote, mutilation. Mutilation, in the moral sense, not in the physical, because if I scratch myself, we say, why? I've mutilated myself in some way. And it's a broad use of the term. It means, as it were, the removal of an organ, vital organ, that will not replace itself. One which, in technical terminology of the past, is necessary for the body to be integral, and without integrity, life is threatened. Or, as in the case of sterilization, permanent sterilization, suppresses permanently a vital function. And there is no vital function of the individual so important to the entire human family as that of the power to procreate. This is one of the points that has been made over the centuries. The attempts to suppress procreation totally is ultimately an attempt to, as it were, destroy the entire human family. There are no children, a community disappears. An aging community finds it more and more difficult to support itself for various reasons. We see it happening in many parts of the Western world. Hence the importance of the definitions and of the rules that have been made. It is an issue of life or death. Sometimes in the case of abortion for individuals, in the case of contraception, for the whole human race. And in the case of organ transplants, the very dignity of the human person. This is a central point of the recent talk, just 2 months ago, of the Pope. The key to the solution of the dilemma, what do I do when my parents or grandparents or my children are at that point where it seems that if they live any longer, they're simply useless. They're simply wasting time and money. Let's get it over with fast and stop the treatment. Now, you'd be surprised. I cannot give you chapter and verse as a priest because I hear too many confessions. But it is a fact that many people really don't know what to do. They're confused. And sometimes they agree to things which, according to Catholic moral principles and sound natural law principles, should never be done. And afterwards, they have a terrible sense of guilt. What have they done? Here, I'm not condemning anyone who's made the wrong. I simply point out that the situations that we face in our present circumstances are really agonizing, not just for the person who is dying, but for the person who is caring for them. What should they do? And under pressure, many people. Not with any fault on their part, they lose any sense of what they should do. They're browbeaten almost into this. I'll give you another example from priestly experience. 50 years ago, when I was a young priest, going along the road, you see an accident. It was common for every priest to stop. Can I be of assistance? Perhaps just to hear the confession of someone. Possibly someone who was thinking about being baptized. And every priest brought along has a little bit of holy water. No, that's enough. A few drops, sprinkle, etc. It can be taken care of. Or here's a person's confession. Now you can't, if you stop, you can't get, a priest stops, you can't get near the person who is being attended. Even for a second, to bless him, or hear his confession, possibly. I'll say, what is the reason? Maybe they think priests dressed like this is some devil from hell. I don't know, just like the Jehovah Witnesses, with horns and tail disguised underneath. Here in the back, they're trying to look up and see what they got on underneath. But sometimes it's because they're already cutting him up. Fresh organs are worth sometimes millions. It depends on what it is, like a heart. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but there's big money involved. The Pope alludes to the commercialization of medicine in these things, whereas at this point there shouldn't be any commercial interest at all. But why hide? That's the first point. Secondly, at least on the medical side, a recent article that appeared last summer in the New England Journal of Medicine, that's a bellwether of what's coming along. They weren't particularly Catholic, but at least they were honest enough to admit that the brain death, criteria was worthless. It didn't indicate death at all. They simply frankly said that the person's still alive, if that's all you can say. They simply admitted there are too many exceptions. If you have an exception, one is enough, as it were, to explode or implode the criteria. Therefore, let's face it. They said, the only way you can do this is to have the person, again, now, the sick man has the right, as it were, to determine this is the moment of death, even though he could continue to live for 10 more years. Yet his life is valuous and so on. So he agrees, as it were, provided he doesn't have to suffer too much pain, but I don't know who can guarantee what pain you suffer when you're starved to death or put to sleep, etc. Unfortunately, those who put people to sleep haven't experienced it themselves to be able to say empirically that this is the case. Anyway, they're suggesting that we should make legal suicide, assisted suicide legal in these instances, and then we could have lots of fresh organs. Death has nothing to do with the question of when you can take organs out of a person. As long as he's agreeable, very agreeable, we'll legalize suicide in these instances. Of course, if you legalize it in this instance, you know what's going to happen. It'll be legalized in a lot of other instances which are declared to be useful. Watch that word, useful. Utilitarianism is simply a fancy name for changing the ultimate point of reference in moral matters from God to me. Pragmatism. And that reverses the name. Charity, therefore, becomes mere sentimentality. Advantageous to me, whatever it is to you. But after all, you should be glad that it's advantageous to me. Because after all, you have only a few more minutes to live, and I should have. I wouldn't have, but I should have. Why should I have it? And you shouldn't have it. That's a purely arbitrary decision, and it makes, therefore, all love, all charity, radically irrational. What is irrational is unreasonable, and what is unreasonable ultimately is defined as tyrannical. Who's the tyrant? Me. All the world is organized in view of my utility. These are the things we have to reflect upon, and then we can understand better why it is that we should strive to perfect our observance of charity. Love should be humble. And if it's not humble, it's not love of goodness for its own sake, the goodness of God, but it's love of me for my own sake, which is to go. And how did I come into being in the first place? Because someone loved me first. That is the answer to all arguments, as it were, that are utilitarian. Anyway, those are the two points. And how do you ultimately justify this? Well, after all, Christ gave his life. That is, he died. He committed suicide so that we might live. But did he? He never did. He said, "Woe to him by whom the Son of Man is betrayed." Yes, the Father permitted this, part of his providential plan, but he didn't ordain that his son be condemned to death. And he didn't ordain that any of us be condemned unjustly in that fashion. What he insists upon is that every man have the time that he is allotted for him to live. That was given, as it were, with that wonderful moment of procreation, which is the best way of putting it. And we are allotted plenty of time, even if we lie in a bed for 10 more years. But that is a part of God's plan. To reject that is ultimately to reject God. And to reject God is to be without hope. Saint Paul. An atheist is one ultimately, the atheist, no prayer God exists. He doesn't want him to exist, but he does. But to be without God is to be without hope. That is to reject him. It is to render the whole human situation at the present time absolutely hopeless. What we must admit is Christ didn't commit suicide, but he willingly, as it were, willingly allowed certain things to happen because of the plan of his Father. As it were, for many minutes. We shan't go into it any further, but we can sum it up under the phrase, which was popularized especially, but it's not new, by Pope John Paul, redemptive value of suffering. Therefore, let us see how the Holy Father, the points that he makes in the discourse, discuss, which he personally presented to those meeting on November the 7th of last year in Rome, a symposium on organ transplant plans, which involved a very heated arguments about brain death. Those theologians were absolutely opposed to it. And those theologians who want to innovate, no, we can accept brain death as a sufficient criterion for permitting organ transplants. And I don't mean merely the modernists, because I know a couple of very traditional theologians think it's all right. There's no problem with it at all. Whereas I have a considerable problem, especially when various states and ultimately perhaps the whole country will, as it were, legalize the take, for instance, a person is unconscious in an accident, as it were, seemingly will die very quickly. You can, as it were, as long as he has not said, I do not want to donate organs, you can go ahead and do it. Even though Connecticut is one point in instance where this sort of a thing is constantly being innovated. That's where all the problems about legalizing contraceptives began. Griswold versus Connecticut, a famous case started about 50 or 60 years ago and brought to a term, and they said, no, it won't lead to abortion legalizing. Well, within 10 years they had Roe versus Wade, and abortion became the legal thing. You have the choice in some instances to kill somebody you don't want around for whatever reason. Now it's not just abortion, but infanticide. In two states, Oregon and Washington, have legalized assisted suicide. I suppose the next thing will be assisted murder. You know what they used to joke about 60 years ago, Murder Incorporated. It was a radio program by that title. Everybody laughed. It's impossible. This is crazy. But it's like as were the 1920s and 30s when they had Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers running on in the 24th century AD when this was space travel. It'll come 50 years later. That's what everybody was doing. But why you would want to roam around the moon? I suppose be a lunatic. The lunatics. That's where the word lunatic comes from. The whole point of science is not to, as we do everything that is possible technically, but to do that was reasonable. And above all, is reasonable is sound medicine. And here's where we see sound science, sound medicine ultimately presupposes good morals, and good morals ultimately rest upon the full understanding of how and why God made this world for the sake of Jesus and Mary. That's where the spirituality comes in. So the first point that the Pope makes, and it's a very important one, even though it's not explained in great detail, but the theologians understand what he means. Organ donation, he says, is a wonderful progress scientifically, but the mere fact that certain things are possible, some good, some not good, it can only be, what's the difference between it? If we have a sound moral norm. What is the sound moral norm in this instance? It's organ donation. Donation is not a thing unless it is motivated by charity and received in charity. If you begin to come, this is the first point of all, if you begin, as it were, because of need of organs, demand, supply and demand, what are you doing automatically? If you basically are inspired, you're commercializing the person. To commercialize the person is to simply put him on the level of any other tool, on the level of a pig or cow. If a cow gets too old to produce any milk, what do you usually do? You slaughter the cow, and we eat it. Is this is what you're going to come to? Reinstitute cannibalism, etc. They say that there's nothing like human flesh as it were to delight the palate. I couldn't get near. The Filipinos have a way of preparing eggs, and what it says, I can't remember the name, and you see, as it were, the half-formed chicken inside on special occasion. Nothing particularly immoral, but the only thing I couldn't eat when I was in the Philippines. Their eggs were wonderful, but when I saw that chicken there, it was a bit too much. The Pope refers to this, the commercialization of embryos. For what they call, they want to legalize it again, stem cell research using embryos. It means the death of a person. It's the same thing. Present it to somebody to eat or use it for some other advantage. The principle here is once we admit that kind of a principle, we have a different kind of spirituality. It's a kind nobody should wish on his worst enemy. That was the remark of Blessed Charles of Austria, the late emperor, who was beatified by Pope John Paul II. One of the things he said when he was being pressured by the German Kaiser to ship Lenin into Russia to get Russia out of the war so the Germans could win in France was, "I would never do that thing. I don't care if we lose the war. I will not do something that I would not wish, even on my worst enemy, to bring in somebody into a country that would ruin what is still a Christian order of things and substitute one which in his mind was radically diabolic." He was right. And then they did it another way to get him in. He was almost, as it were, the victim of a German attack for refusing to do what they wanted to get the war over with faster, in their favor, naturally. Now, for the first, the donation of organs is a witness to charity. That's a very important point. The Pope argues that organ donation, unless a simple donation, in no way legislated. That is, you're compelled to do it. The law presumes that you want to do it, or that sort of thing. Or, as it were, because big money is involved. It's a simple gift. Nobody should be getting rich. In accord with the very nature of charity, to be defined metaphysically and not by way of instances. But isn't it great that you did this for me? And don't we feel great about it? Both donor and recipient must be motivated by true charity. I must not presume that my life is more valuable than your life. As persons, we are equal before God. There are no checkbooks before the pearly gate. There is no damage control. Well, I was a cardinal of the Holy Roman Church. I get in without being checked, as they do at the security point. You're going to answer the questions, yes or no. No, because Christ already knows the answer, and you can't fool him. You did this, you did that, you're so on. Yes. All right. 20 years in purgatory. All right. If you're in the state of sin, you end up in HELL. These are the basic facts we must keep in mind. There's nothing unjust or arbitrary about that. God is just, but he's not cruel. St. Thomas makes that important point. When God punishes, it's always for a reason. Reason is just. And if we think about it, if you weren't just, there wouldn't be any moral order. There wouldn't be any respect for persons. And the second point here is what the Pope makes. We're all equal. You can't say my life is more valuable, therefore we should have stem cell research to be sure that I have the right kind of medicines to deal with certain possible diseases that I have at a certain point. It's not possible to cure me. Death is not the worst thing. If I'm in a state of grace, I go to a better life. Well, there is no death anymore. Therefore, the second point he makes, the history of modern medicine is basically one of great progress, such as to permit a life ever more worthy for one who suffers. He says a recent example is the possibility of organ transplant. But precisely because it is such, and the demand for organs exceeds the donations, it is critically important to reflect on the moral norms involved in the procedures attending on the harvesting. And if you don't, it's simply, as it were, a tyrannical act. It's technically possible, it's intelligible, but it doesn't make it right. And that's the key point. Genuine progress in medicine must always be governed by good morals. Bad morals, as the old doctor in Albany said once to me, I still can't remember his name, bad morals is bad medicine. And the more directly and immediately medicine deals with the dignity of the person, the more necessary it is to be sure you're following sound moral principles. And the principles that the Pope lays down, even though he doesn't use all the technical scholastic language, are identical as we shall see. Third point. Among the norms, I'm running out of time, so I got to go a little faster. Among the norms is above all this: the human body, unlike that of the beast. Note well, human body, bovine body, serpent body, simian body, are not in the same species of body. It's nice and neat, logical from the ancients, but there is a radical difference between beast and man. It's the difference between non-person and person. The person, and this is a Stoic error, is identified solely with the soul. That's all right if you're an angel. But who tempted the Adam and Eve to think of themselves as angels? A fallen angel. The human body is reflects the personhood. It's the temple of the Holy Spirit for that reason. And that is the reason, as the Pope points out, even with the corpse, certain rules must be followed. You cannot treat a human corpse as you would an animal corpse. As, for instance, in the days, penal days in England, the heads of the martyrs were kicked around like footballs. That's a mortal sin. You have to have a certain respect for the mystery of the resurrection to come. There is nothing wrong. There are stories of saints and martyrs who provided a leg, etc., after they were martyred. Miraculously, it could be used, as it were, to help someone, as it were, who was missing a leg. Sometimes, as it were, he had a white leg and sometimes had a black leg together. Whether or not you can leave aside, as it were, whatever questions you have. Please don't ask me any questions. I'm merely stating the fact. The idea of transplanting human organs from one human body to another is not a new idea. The technique is something which is new at the present time. But the technique, as a word, must never, never violate the dignity of the human body. And so long as a body and soul are united, an attempt to take vital organs or to suppress vital functions is a mutilation. And mutilation is something, in this sense, intrinsically evil. The principle of totality, whereby you can take off a leg, as gangrene, etc., threatens that. But here you are intervening to save the life of an individual person. Consequently, there is a second effect, the principle of double effect, that follows for. Obviously, you're missing a leg, but you're still alive. Body and soul are still united. But to, as it were, directly take a leg from me, who am not sick, as it were, not yet, don't have to, as it were, and give it to you, you, is a direct intervention which aims at taking life from me. That cannot be happened. That is intrinsically evil. It's forbidden by the fifth commandment for the same reason that murder is forbidden. Only the Lord has the right to determine these things and govern these. I don't have the right to say it's time for you to die. I have to take care of you. That's charity. And to refuse that is to show oneself a pragmatist. I'm only interested in what is convenient for me. That's not charity. I don't see convenience as wrong. But I say to govern one's life by convenience is something which is radically wrong. Wrong. To arrogate the power to determine this is to play God. All modern dictators and all ancient dictators have played God. One of the worst was the dictator of Rome when our Lord was condemned by Pontius Pilate, who knew he was innocent, but condemned him because he was scared out of his wits that the paranoid in Rome, Tiberius Augustus, one of the worst ones, would take his head off. Which he did the next, practically reduced him to nothing because of a complaint from the Jews. So it was easy to arouse his suspicion. So he used the Praetorian Guard, which is the equivalent of the KGB or the SS or anything of that kind, to keep order. As regards the donation of organs to be taken from the donor while alive, respect for the personal identity of the donor requires that said donation involves no risk to the donor's health and his personal identity. His personal identity involves not just the soul, but also the body. Here we are talking what is the basis for judging mutilation in the moral sense to be wrong. And that's the obstacle to mass organ transplants at the present time. And now the tendency is to simply say, well, we're not going to worry about you, dead or alive. Alive. Enough that he agrees, as it were, to assisted suicide, suicide. And the final, as it were, one is from the dead person. Unless there is some real consent, at least through relatives, etc., it's wrong to take those organs. If the person himself didn't want it done, then there is no question of donation. If there's no donation, you're simply commercializing things. And that is disrespect to the body that will one day rise. So as a word with this, we see. I've gone over my limit here a little bit. I simply point out that some people were scandalized. The Pope didn't read a chapter from St. Thomas's Summa or from one of the old moralists, the Jesuit casuists, etc., which have been very fine. But they wouldn't have met head on, as it were, in a polite way, right, those who are questioning the tradition. But as he pointed out in the address, first Christmas he was Pope, to the cardinals and bishops of the Curia, there is a correct way of interpreting, translating, and there is an incorrect. That of continuity and renewal, that of discontinuity, introducing something radically different and new, and which leads to schism, a breakup of the Christian unity. What he stresses quite clearly are all the traditional principles. First, the importance of charity defined in terms of the object that is the very goodness of God. That means recognizing those things which are reserved alone to the Lord. No, it's not wrong, as it were, in a fight, in a battle, as it were, to protect an innocent person, to kill the attacker. But once again, this is something that God okays. To execute a person for certain crimes is not in itself evil. Whether we should do it, prudent to do it, is another question. We leave that aside. But once again, capital punishment, the rules of governing a just war, are established by it is he who authorizes taking of life in certain limited cases. If you don't have his permission, if you do not enjoy his authority, you can't do it. Lynch law is evil. I have no right at all on my own, simply because I don't like what you did to me, so boom, right between the eyes, bullhead. Well, there are people who do that sort of thing. That is wrong. And no amount of righteous indignation works the justice of God. That's also scriptural. We have to take all, and not just one text out of context. Secondly, it makes perfectly clear where mutilation, we'll call this where an operation to extract, cut off a diseased limb, such as an arm or hand or finger or whatever, that cannot be able to save the life, that pertains only to the individual person. It does not pertain to the moral unit. This is a point made clear during the Nazi controversy, who maintained precisely that the principle tells, since we are all part of the same great body of the noblest race of them all, anybody, as it were, who was a disgrace, declared a disgrace, as it were, could be executed, mutilated, because a threat to the unity of the body. And there were some theologians in Germany at that time that tried to explain the mystical body on those terms, as though the unity of the church was that of the unity of a physical body. And that is a horrendous error. It was condemned by Pope Pius XII in the encyclical Mystici Corpus, 1943, precisely because certain theologians of Germany were not coming close to, but had already adopted some of the basic principles justifying the cruelties of the Nazi regime. But let us not think that only Germans accept those sort of things. We find many, many places in the world where the same ideas are now au courant and accepted as being the normal thing by majority. The second point is ultimately, as well, the Pope is pointing out, all science ultimately converges on medicine, as it was understood in the Middle Ages. Still is. That's why we're interested in science. What good is it going to be to us, above all, where we need a cure? That brings up the whole problem of charity and suffering, and how it is to be carried out. The importance, ultimately, in these questions of remembering the cross of Christ. To those who are scandalized, those who don't believe, it's horrendous. But to those who have a faith, they see clearly that the answer to all of this is to be found found in always living in accord, and to recognize that the conditions for organ transplants, as were in addition to these considered, must always involve on both sides as genuine charity, to give out of charity and also to receive out of charity, not as something do me. That's the giveaway in these instances. There are some other applications I could go into in great length, but I simply point out that sound catechesis, Jesus, you don't have to be a PhD, as it were, to understand these things, but it is important to review the catechism, all of them. This recent one, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, but go back and see that there is a tremendous continuity. I have some texts here from Pope John Paul II. What the Pope said in this recent discourse is a kind of summary of many of the things that the late Holy Father was insisting upon. Then effectively, without using the term, he excluded what is called brain death. You must be, you cannot use probabilism in these instances. You must be sure. It is the view that is tutsior, safer for whom? Safer for the person. You cannot, as we're, fool around with probabilities when you deal with justice, when you deal with salvation. So anyway, I'll stop a moment and see if you have questions, and if we don't have time to do many this morning, we can go on this evening. I won't be so long-winded. I simply summarize a little bit. Yes, go ahead.
There are some people who are healthy and have donated a kidney to someone who needs a kidney.
That's one of the cases that's most argued. But you have to show that two kidneys isn't normal to integrity. It's not a question of whether the person is reasonably healthy afterwards. That's a utilitarian criterion. The question here is whether the person is integral afterwards. You can get rid of one kidney, my kidneys, if it is the diseased kidney. If that's the only solution to saving my life. The further question is whether you can take one of my healthy kidneys and transfer it. The fact that I don't die immediately is not the issue. The question is whether or not this is integral to my person as a composite of body and soul. I cannot treat, the Pope states, I cannot treat my body as a quarry for extra, because I have two eyes, can you take one out? Well, people say I can see equally well with one eye. I don't entirely agree with them, because I have sight only, practically speaking, only in one eye at the present time. It seems to me that I saw a great deal better when I had two. And since I'm completely deaf in the left ear, which is embarrassing on occasions, I can appreciate why two ears are a great advantage. But here, it's not the question of advantage. That's the whole point. What can or cannot be done must be decided in terms of, you might say, absolutes here. There are limits on what we can do, morally speaking, with the knowledge which we have. If we say there are no limits, we are playing God.
Well,
I know that modern, all of us, we're all children of our age. We see it in terms of, okay, well, what's wrong with it? If it doesn't particularly harm me, I go on for 60 more years with one kidney. I don't kick the bucket. But that's a false. The whole issue here is that the correct way of framing the question.
Well, some people are framing it in the context of charity. I'm being charitable.
Yeah. The Pope's question is this charity.
That's my question.
this is my question too. The answer is, if you violate the basic norms of the natural law, which is the basis of the Christian law, it's not charity. Subjectively, there may be no imputability. You may be sincere and so on and so forth. But from an objective point of view, you're undermining the whole basis of the natural moral order, a personal order. what I tried to point out in the beginning, that once you make an exception in any of these cases, you open the door, as it were, to other exceptions. It seems to be restricted. It's only because I'm dying or because I'm suffering a great deal. But it's a curious thing. The human mind, or maybe I should say the human heart, has a way of jumping. Well, this is disadvantageous to me. I find it oppressive that you have more money. So I think I'll simply take your money. I know people who think like that. You may say it's a rare, but once you begin making exceptions on this basis, any place along the line, it's only a matter of time when you begin, as it were, as we are seeing happening, legalizing assisted suicide. How far can you go with that? If a person politically incorrect, you can say, well, maybe he should volunteer. He's causing a lot of people guilt trips. So let's persuade him, in charity, to agree to assisted suicide, to bite the pill, as they used to do in the Nazi, make the poor person who was condemned, as it were, take a poison pill and say, bite. Because in a certain sense, that was the way they got rid of Rommel after the assassination attempt of Hitler in 1944. My point here is if you admit one, for the sake of charity, an exception in norms which are absolute, you have opened the door to total moral social chaos. When will it be my turn to be persuaded, out of charity, to take myself out of this world, so the world can be a better place for somebody else? Anyway, that's as far, I don't want to repeat what I said before. If you take a pragmatic approach to charity, and many people do, and I don't say they're going to be, merely because they're influenced by their times, that they're necessarily bad people. But what I am saying is that those have the responsibility for the common good must attend to these things. Hard cases make bad law. That's what the title of my second conference. Everybody tends to want to say, "I'm really suffering." Suffering is can't we do something about this? Can't we modify things so I don't suffer so much? Well, yes, up to the point that you don't modify the things that God says are not modifiable. We're talking about two different philosophies here, and therefore the speculative question becomes: which one is correct? Yeah. I'll end. I see they want me to go. Yeah, go ahead.
I understand what you're saying, and as I sit here thinking about what you're saying, one part of me says, well, you know, it seems to be you're making a huge leap from, you know, being someone who is saying, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to remain healthy, I'm doing out of charity, out of love for another individual to give them a chance.
Right.
You're going from there to saying, well, you know, it's gonna escalate into something like euthanasia and so on and so forth. And part of me says, well, that seems to be a huge quantum leap.
Well, that's the quantum, yeah, from that point.
And on the other hand, the other part of me says, society being what it is has proven that you give a little and you end up taking a lot.
Yeah, well, that's an ad hoc argument that I use. What I'm trying to point out is that I'm the one who's not making the leap. The leap has been made by all who introduce the utilitarian philosophy, which has been around for several centuries now, and make it the standard of law. This is where the problem is. The second other problem is, of course, there's an inadequate catechesis. People no longer understand the difference between natural law at the biological, purely subpersonal level, and natural law in the traditional Christian sense, the law written in our hearts. The hearts even of those who don't know Christ. St. Paul refers to this in the first and second chapter of the letter to the Romans, but I won't go any further. Here I simply say, I am simply saying, at the present time, those who do not accept, let's say, the teaching of St. Paul on the natural law and the objective criteria for charity have gotten themselves into an extraordinarily dangerous situation that may affect both the the community as a whole, and also their eternal salvation eventually. I'll give you other examples from history. Lord Acton, much as I disagree with some of his views, but he said some things that were very true. Those who don't know history are condemned to repeat it. That's what a Dutch lady 25 years ago I was conversing with in Rome told me. He said, I'll never go into a hospital. I said, I was one of the ones, few Dutch people who opposed all the things that were introduced into Holland being 14, 50 years ago. Didn't take long. He said, we sacrificed, risked our lives and sacrificed our lives during the war to oppose what the Nazis were doing or trying to introduce. And now we've done worse. He said, if I go into a hospital, I'll be dead in 24 hours. Because I'm a persona non grata. This is a thing. But again, I'm not trying to use an argument here. I'm trying to use a spiritual argument, which is fundamentally philosophical, correct, fair as well. I'm not to say it happened here, we don't want it to happen there. That's, in a certain sense, a use of pragmatism to move on. I'm simply saying the pragmatic approach to these questions, say, well, it doesn't harm you, go ahead and do it, is an inadequate, basically a false approach, and ultimately must lead to turning. God intended the world to be an antechamber of heaven. It will become something else once this attitude takes hold of the of those who have control of the common good, and secondly, of worse persons, individuals who subscribe to it, whether they're the ones, as it were, trying to impose on others, or whether others, as it were, for convenience, make themselves slaves, as did so many Catholics and Protestants in Germany during the Nazizeit. And they tried to excuse, well, we're only obeying orders. But we're not permitted to obey orders which are false. We must always obey God on these things. That's the basis, even though we don't see what are the consequences. Yes?
Well, Peter, can we just close with a prayer? Can we close with a prayer? We can.
All right. Save your questions for tonight. Because we're going to be on the same basic subject, except in what are called, quote-unquote, emergency contraceptives. Is there any such thing? Or is it a misnomer? Maybe what they intend to indicate is all right, but that's the wrong name for it. But what I want to point out, why is contraception intrinsically evil, not just abortion? We have to reflect, and we'll see, we come to the same fundamental problem. Who sets the rules for the beginning of personal life? I can do whatever I want to make a better cow. It may not help the cow, but certainly makes the beef much better. Seedless grapes are great for me. It's no problem getting rid of, pretending I'm not spitting the grapes all over. But it doesn't help the grape. No more grapevines. And grapevines do cease to live. That's just the point. That's all right. What's called micro-evolution, improve. But why do we want to improve the animal species or plant species? Because it benefits us. Not necessarily because it benefits the species. As long as we do it within the limits that govern human activity, there are possessions within those limits, is all right. It's not cruelty. But to think that killing an animal or rare species is worse than aborting an infant represents, as it were, a far more serious sin. This is the point that perhaps as we're coming. Is it wrong to adopt systematically this kind of philosophy, ultimately theology? Whose theology is it? And thus is the question. And this is what we must meditate upon. This is why we're dealing with this during a retreat, because if we don't have the counsel of Our Lady, if we don't have the light of the Holy Spirit, we're not going to make any progress in these matters, no matter how much we dial. I've known many doctors over the course of the years, and above all is doctors, physicians, the ones who are true Christians. They agree with that. Mm-hmm. They didn't want anything to do with this, as were total freedom to do anything you please as long as it works.